Welcome to episode 56. I'm Stuart McCullum, I'm the CEO of VHAA. And starting with this week's industrial roundup, and in particular with regards to community health and the medical scientists agreement, we have met with the MSAV on Thursday the 29th of March to progress bargaining for that particular agreement. There is a summary of that discussion available to community health members through the community health stream on the VHAA community app. With respect to our health service members and the Health and Allied Services Agreement, we're hosting a security review forum. It's the second of those forums with participants from the Security Review Reference Group, the HWU delegates, as well as department representatives. The aim of that forum is to finalise the review of the security officer classifications within the Health and Allied Services EBA. In terms of the allied health professionals, on Thursday the 29th of March, VHAA are hosting the Health Professionals SDPPWG meeting with VAPA and DHHS. We've previously reported that there were a number of outstanding items that we were awaiting feedback from VAPA on. They've since provided that feedback and we're in the process of working through that so that we can bring that feedback to the meeting on the 29th of March. Regarding the Doctors EBA, following the outcome of the ballot for doctors in training and for medical specialists, we're in the process of finalising the lodgement and all the relevant materials to support the lodgement to the Fair Work Commission for approval of both those agreements. Once lodged, the process may take a number of weeks, potentially a couple of months, in order to go through the approval process at the Fair Work Commission. But we'll be updating members as we go along, including if we get any queries from the Commission through the VHA community app. And with respect to the maintenance agreement, members are reminded that the ballot for the maintenance agreement commences on Wednesday the 28th of March until Friday the 6th of April. As always, all our activities are being summarised through the VHA community app. If at any time you experience difficulties with regards to the app, please contact our office. And that's it for this week's Industrial Roundup. This week we're putting the spotlight on one of our members, Barwon Health, in particular with respect to their initiatives in terms of Indigenous employment and the provision of healthcare to the Aboriginal community. I'm joined today by Sherelle McGurk, who's the Koori Workforce Officer and, as I understand, a recent winner for the International Women's Day First Nations Women in Greater Geelong Region, so congratulations. Normally this would be the part where I would welcome you as a guest, but really on this occasion, it's the other way around.
Oh, thank you.
Sherelle, can I ask you perhaps to do the acknowledgement of country?
Yep, absolutely. And please forgive me, I will be reading. I do know most of it, as I explained in our conversation earlier, but we, Barwon Health, acknowledge the traditional owners of the land, the Wadawurrung people of the Kulin Nation, and we pay our respects to the elders, both past and present. We thank the traditional owners for their custodianship of the land and celebrate the continuing culture of the Wadawurrung people, acknowledging the memory of honourable ancestors. And we also welcome Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people present today.
Thank you for that. I understand that as part of Barwon Health's Reconciliation Action Plan, that an acknowledgement of country is included at the commencement of all meetings and events held at Barwon Health?
That's right.
And so, yep, for those people like me who attend meetings where an acknowledgement of country is undertaken, what's the significance and importance of the acknowledgement of country?
Well, it's really just paying respects and honouring that we're on Aboriginal land, and paying respects to the traditional owners, so the people who are, in this case, Wadawurrung people, here on this country, that live on this country. You're paying your respects to their land, and to also, you're almost like saying thank you for allowing us to conduct our business on this land.
Just in terms of, particularly for a health service, which all sorts of people visit a health service, and how it makes Aboriginal people feel when there is an acknowledgement of country. What effect does it have for people who are, for Aboriginal people when they hear an acknowledgement of country at a place like Barwon Health?
Oh, look, it's so important. I think because we've now become, as in we staff members here, have become so accustomed to having an acknowledgement of country at meetings and gatherings that we hold, It's when we don't have the acknowledgement that it's very weird. Like, it's just straight away you feel that something is missing, and it is, because we've become so accustomed to it as staff members. So it's almost like someone knocking on your door, and then you greet them and you say, come in, as opposed to someone just walking inside your house without even knocking. You know, it's hard to articulate, but you feel as an Aboriginal person that when someone does an acknowledgement, that they really value and respect that they're on, or, you know, that they're conducting business with you, and they're showing that respect by acknowledging you as an Aboriginal person.
That's a really great description in terms of the difference between knocking on your door and asking to come in, as opposed to simply walking through into someone's house.
Absolutely, and that's exactly, you know, a Western concept that most people would understand. That's exactly what it feels like. You think, oh my God, how rude, you know, to walk straight through the door without even, you know, knocking first.
So I should ask, first of all, where it is we are.
We're on Wadawurrung country, which is part of the Kulin Nation. And Wadawurrung country goes from here in Geelong to Colac. It goes up to Ballarat. I'm not sure the exact location of Ballarat, but it does extend to Ballarat. And then on, and I'm not very good with my bearings, but up to the Werribee River.
Okay.
So that's Wadawurrung country, which is part of the broader Kulin Nation.
And in terms of the particular office that we're meeting here in Barwon Health, if you could just tell people which unit we're in.
Okay, we're in the Aboriginal Health Unit, which is located at University Hospital in Geelong, in Ryra Street, Geelong, which is our main site of business.
And in terms of the Aboriginal Health Unit, I understand that that's something that's been recently established?
That's right, yeah, we're very pleased. We've just moved here in November 2017, so we haven't even had an official opening of this this lovely building. We now are located all together, so it's myself as the Koori Workforce Officer. We have our two Aboriginal Health Liaison Officers. We have a trainee, a Policy and Projects trainee, and we have our Manager for Policy and Projects, and we also have our Aboriginal Health Manager. Sorry, I'm getting a bit mixed up.
Not sure the exact title.
Yeah, the exact title, but she is our overall manager of the entire unit, and we're all located in this one office now, which is fabulous.
Well, the interesting thing about that is that there's a diversity in terms of the services and roles.
Absolutely.
What's the thinking behind putting all those kinds of roles together in the one physical space?
That's a good question. I'm thinking about it in my head. Prior to us all being located together, I was located in workforce, so in HR, which is, you know, just down the corridor and around the corner. So not physically far away. But if you can imagine myself being in workforce as an expert in workforce matters.
We all have
the
that
Aboriginal
moment.
Yeah, in the Aboriginal space.
Yep.
And then the Aboriginal Health Liaison Officers were just located down the corridor, and then the Program Manager and the Policy and Project Officers were just here near the lifts. So if you can kind of imagine that while we don't all have the same roles, we are generally all related and, you know, dependent on each other in terms of Aboriginal health.
Hmm.
And we were in, three different locations.
Okay.
So now what we've done is we are all, as a unit, amalgamated into the one office. And I think just in terms of what we do and the way we operate and the way we do interlink with each other, I think it's fantastic to have us all in the one office. I must admit, I was a bit sceptic, thinking, oh my God, I'm leaving workforce and, you know, best move that's ever been made.
Okay, so they're a bit synchronous and getting everything working as effectively as possible.
Absolutely, because we do rely on each other for different things, you know, as opposed to policy and projects.
Mm.
They can ask a policy question and, you know, ask me, okay, well, can you tell me who I need to speak with in workforce, or is this something you can help me with? I can say absolutely, rather than send an email. They've just got to turn around and ask me the question, you know. And look, physical location really shouldn't make a difference to the way you conduct a business. But in terms of the fact that we are Aboriginal people working in an organisation where we are dependent on each other for various things, it makes sense to have us all in the one office.
So today I'd like to find out a bit more about what Barwon Health has been doing and its experiences so far in terms of delivering healthcare and to Aboriginal people, including culturally appropriate healthcare, the role of cultural awareness within an organisation like Barwon Health and employment in particular. So if I could, just in terms of that issue of primary objectives in terms of delivering care to Aboriginal communities, are there particular priorities that Barwon Health has in that respect?
Yeah, there are a few priorities that I'm aware of. So at the moment, well, one of the biggest things with Aboriginal health is access. Aboriginal people accessing a mainstream healthcare organisation. So that's probably perhaps the biggest factor in why we have the Aboriginal Health Liaison Officers and the Aboriginal Health Unit is, you know, people in this community know that we're here, and that is, I mean, it's not the only thing that makes people want to come here, like Aboriginal people come here, but what it does is it does assist, you know, people know that we're here and that we work here, and they know that if they come here, that they're going to be looked after, but they're also going to have access to the Aboriginal Health Liaison Officers. So it's they will still get a good quality of care, but they have the additional aspect of having an Aboriginal Health Liaison Officer come and visit them. You know, additional to the care that they are provided by, say, you know, your nurse and your doctor and your specialists.
It's interesting that issue of access and there being a barrier to access in the sense that there isn't a formal barrier, and hospitals are interesting places and anyone can walk through the door, as we know.
Yes.
But that there is a barrier that has prevented people from utilising.
Absolutely.
And that mechanism that you're utilising to try and overcome that. But for those who aren't familiar with that idea of there being an access barrier, could you talk to what that access barrier is?
Yeah, look, historically, and I think it's really important that we look at the historical aspects of hospitals and what they represent to Aboriginal people. Hospitals in a historical context were a place where you went to either die or give birth to your children and they get taken away. So if you look at the historical aspect of a hospital as an institution, then that's why access for most Aboriginal people, you know, they don't want to come to a hospital, or they'll leave it until the very last moment. You know, sometimes in terms of their health being at its worst, and then, you know, access a hospital. So we, as a health organisation, obviously would like to, and we are breaking down that barrier. But obviously, as you can imagine, it's not an easy fix, and it does take time. And so, you know, staff members like we have, but also something as simple as having an acknowledgement of country, having artwork around the place. I'm not sure if you in the corridors you've seen that there's some Aboriginal artwork in various locations. We have Wathaurong glass around, you know, all those little, and I say little because they are little pieces and little pockets, but what they do together is assist with making Aboriginal people feel safe to want to come and use our service.
It's interesting in terms of a reference to time, but it's also actually a dedication to resource.
Absolutely.
So just in terms of the kind of population, the Aboriginal population that might use or utilise Barwon Health, Reid, I think that there was a population of around 2,500
That's right,
more,
yep.
But a significant proportion of that population was under 30.
Yes. Our greatest number of, the greatest age group of population, I think was aged between, I think it was 16 and 28, or 14 and 28, something similar to that. So the largest number of the Aboriginal population in this region is aged between those two ages of 16 and, you know, about 28, 16 and 30. While we're talking about the population, I think it's important to note that our smallest population is, you know, Aboriginal people over 65, which is where we talk about life expectancy and the inequality in health, you know, with regards to life expectancy. So I think something like 25% of our population, and I'm talking on a national level, I'm not talking, you know, right this here region. And right now in this region, but on a national level, we're Aboriginal people over 65, about 27% of the population. So if you look at it in that context, I mean, even if I did bring it back to this region, you know, in this community, we would have maybe three, maybe five Aboriginal people in this community of nearly, you know, 2,500 people that would be over 65.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. So bringing it back to that issue of access, and then the way of achieving comfort and confidence to access, and the importance of partnerships and relationships with other entities. I'd like to ask just in terms of the relationship between Barwon Health and Wathaurong. First of all, for those people who aren't familiar with Wathaurong, you're uniquely placed to describe what Wathaurong is.
Yes.
Could you tell people what Wathaurong is?
Yes, Wathaurong Aboriginal Cooperative is our community service organisation here in Geelong. So we have the actual cooperative, as it's called, which has a health service aligned to it as well. So it offers health, justice, it offers community services, family services, education services, so a range of services. And we also have a traditional owner group who provide the cultural aspect, so you're welcome to countries and your smoking ceremonies. And so Wathaurong Aboriginal Cooperative is a 40-year-old organisation, and they, as you said, I am a bit well placed in that I'm currently chair of that organisation. So I don't have you know, day-to-day operational knowledge and aspects of the organisation. I'm actually chair of the board, and so the board directs the CEO.
So just in terms of the connection between Barwon Health and Wathaurong, I understand that it's far more than just a connection of, in terms of goodwill.
Oh, absolutely not.
Long-standing. Something far more formal than that, a memorandum of understanding?
Yep, that's right. There is a memorandum of understanding, and that has been in place for, I think, at least 10 years. And what happens with that what has happened with that memorandum of understanding is that there is, with the Wathaurong Aboriginal Health Service, when that was created, with the relationship that Wathaurong and Barwon Health had, they discussed what that memorandum of understanding would look like, and it was based on mutual respect and understanding of the needs of this community and servicing the needs of this community in terms of health. So originally it started with, I think, about three or four different services, and as time has, you know, transpired, that those services, those outreach services, have increased. So, I think in the start, like I said, it might have been doctors and some nurses working, like, so they're Barwon Health people, but they work at the Wathaurong Health Service. That has now, you know, progressed and increased to endocrinology. It's increased to mental health professionals, registrars, you know, it's including paediatrics. So over time, what has happened is the community have said, these are the services we need. What Wathaurong Health Service have then done is come to, you know, spoken to, negotiated with Barwon Health, and said, we'd like to include these services as part of the memorandum of understanding. So as far as I'm aware, I believe the memorandum of understanding has been upgraded, you know, and
it's developed over time.
It has developed over time. Okay. So the original one was signed, and then I think, well, certainly in the time that I've been here, I've seen another signing with additional services that the community have requested, you know, where there has been a need, and Barwon Health have said, yep, we'll agree to that, and revise the memorandum of understanding. So it's very driven by what the health needs are of this community.
In terms of other documents, I understand there's also the Barwon Health has a Reconciliation Action Plan. What is a Reconciliation Action Plan?
Reconciliation Action Plan is a document, much like a Memorandum of Understanding. And what it is it's an organisation, in this case Barwon Health. So it's it was a collaborative effort, actually, between Barwon Health employing an Aboriginal consultant, a local Aboriginal consultant, to consult with people to talk about people, organisations, you know, people in working in the space, to talk about what, you know, what the wish list is that Bowen Health would like to achieve. So it looks at three key areas: relationships, respect, and opportunities. And so it's an action plan that looks at what this organisation can do to increase their awareness of, and also look at how they can work better with Aboriginal people.
So in terms of those items, relationships, respect, and opportunity, in terms of respect and the role of cultural awareness for a place like Bowen Health, what role does cultural awareness play for an organisation of this size?
Yeah, again, a really good question. Cultural awareness is really important. It's crucial when you're talking about a specific group of people. In this instance, we're talking about Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. So cultural awareness in terms of not just from a staffing perspective, but also from a patient perspective. And we already kind of touched on that when we talked about culturally appropriate care. So I think it's really important that we understand that in order to service the community that we serve, you know, in this case, again, I'll refer to the Aboriginal community, but this could be so for any other disadvantaged group. It's important to understand the cultural aspects that might go along with that. And also understand, you know, something like we're on Wadawurrung country. So, you know, something as basic as that, something like the welcome to country and an acknowledgement of country and how important that is. You know, so our cultural awareness, we have a number of ways in which we conduct cultural awareness. We have an online e-learning tool that's quite interactive. We also have face-to-face sessions, which will cover things like a welcome to country and the basics, you know, we're on Wadawurrung country and what's the importance of that. As well as, you know, a little bit about the stolen generation's disadvantage. So it's quite a general cultural awareness, the online tool. But we also have face-to-face, which are more tailored towards, for example, culturally appropriate care and what that might look like. You know, as well as, you know, mentioning our Aboriginal Health Unit and what we do as a team, you know, as well as, you know, talking about the Aboriginal Health Liaison Officers and their role and how they can assist.
The interesting thing about those is that those are all things that involve the whole of the organisation rather than just part of it. Understand that the Reconciliation Action Plan also identifies four culturally significant events that people can participate in those, such as during NAIDOC Week, is
yes.
that correct?
Yeah, that's right.
And
yes.
that involves really anyone?
Oh, absolutely. All of our events involve, and it's an open invitation. Obviously, you can imagine there is no way we're going to get 6,500 staff at any of our events at the one time, because obviously we wouldn't be able to be open for business. But
it would disturb the catering.
Yes, yes. But our invitations are to the entire staff, because the important thing with our four events, and I will just mention those
Please.
Four events because they are, and I mean, look, I think it's important to remember that it's not just four events throughout the year. There is so much more to Aboriginal culture and, you know, community and, you know, reconciliation than those four events. But what we tried to do was we tried to look at the Aboriginal calendar over the year, and of those, what are, you know, because obviously, like I said, we can't have everyone off, you know, doing not just Aboriginal business, but all of that business throughout an entire, you know, calendar year. So what we did is we looked at the Aboriginal calendar of significant dates, and we agreed as a group, Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal staff, that we would host. So our first event is always the National Apology in February. So we just had that a month ago. We're coming up to next Thursday, the third Thursday in March, which is National Close the Gap Day. And obviously that's crucial because it's to do with health. So of course we would be involved in that as a health organisation. Our third significant event is during National Reconciliation Week, which goes from the 27th of May to the 3rd of June. And there are a number of significant dates within that week. So we usually host one event during that week. And then of course in NAIDOC Week, which is the 6th to about the 13th of July every year, and that's a week long event as well, but we usually only host one event during that week as well. So interestingly though, our events, we always work around the Wathaurong as well. We tend to negotiate with them when we will host our event so that we're not overlapping. So for example, next week we have an industry breakfast, which is obviously separate to but inclusive of Warthorong and Barwon Health.
Right.
Then we have our event at 12:30. We're having a morning tea. And then Warthorong are actually hosting a barbecue lunch.
Okay.
So, and it's all in recognition of National Close the Gap Day.
Okay. In the context of that Reconciliation Action Plan, you also referred to opportunity, which probably neatly brings us to employment.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to understand a little bit about what Barwon Health's journey has been with respect to Aboriginal employment.
Okay. Well, that's something I can quite easily talk about, because obviously that's what I do here as the Career Workforce Officer. So I commenced here in August 2014 as the first Aboriginal Workforce Officer, you know, to implement the Aboriginal Employment Plan. And at that time we had, I think, about 21, 22 staff. It's now January 2018 and we've had, we've had about a 40% increase in staff. So that takes our numbers up to 37, and we're soon to have a couple more. So so that's 37 Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander staff out of 6,500. So while that doesn't sound great, I'm really pleased with the direction we're heading in. I think it's important to acknowledge that any increase is good, but also that we are employing people in every aspect of our business.
Just in terms of that, you made reference to an Aboriginal employment plan.
Mm-hmm.
And just what struck me about that is the fact that you have a plan.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just a general desire to increase employment. There is something more strategic about the way in which the organisation is undertaking that process. Does that include a target?
It does, yes, it certainly does. We at Barwon Health have done things a little bit differently, because most other organisations that I'm aware of have had a Reconciliation Action Plan first and then gone with the Aboriginal Employment Plan or Diversity Plan, whereas we've actually done the employment plan, or implemented an employment plan, and then we've done a Reconciliation Action Plan. So while they're separate, but obviously there is some overlap between the two. And with our employment plan, we have a target of 1% of our total staff numbers, our total workforce. So our total workforce is around 6,500, and therefore our 1% is around about 65. So we're just over halfway.
Just over halfway
to meeting our target.
But by the same token, you've had a 35 to 40% increase over the last sort of 3 or 4 years.
3 and a bit years, yeah. And yeah, within that, we have, you know, speech pathologist, we have an occupational therapist, we have physiotherapist, we have, a doctor. We do have a doctor. We have a lot of nurses.
You did make a comment about the fact that within that group, that they represent, it's across all parts of the organisation.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not just collecting numbers. It's about much more than just the numbers.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I stand by the fact that while we've not achieved our target, we have great capacity in terms of a broad section of our workforce, as opposed to, you know, I mean, I think that you could say, yeah, we've reached our target of, you know, 1%. We have 35 trainees and, you know, two cooks. And I'm not belittling, you know, those workers in any organisation. But what I'm saying is we need to recognise that Aboriginal people have the ability to be doctors, to be nurses, to be physiotherapists, to be speech pathologists. I think that we need to recognise that, especially in this day and age. You know, and that's all I'm saying about, you know, because we do need cleaners, we do need, you know, baristas, and we do need people to serve food. But Aboriginal people, you know, it's not just about that for Aboriginal people. It's about working in both clinical and non-clinical areas right across the organisation.
So it's about ensuring that there's not a limitation.
Oh, absolutely.
You made reference to doctors before.
Yes.
I understand that Barwon Health
we have a doctor.
Has an Aboriginal doctor.
Yes, yes,
we do. When did that occur?
Melissa, Dr. Carroll started with us in January of last year, so January 2017. And she has been with us for just over 12 months. So she's completed her intern year and she's now on her second year. I think at this stage, and I'm not au fait with the, you know, the whole doctor setup, but I believe this second year is more about her specialising in a particular area.
Just in terms of when you do get someone into a role like that, or into nursing roles or OT roles, does that have the effect of drawing other people to come and work at Barwon Health in those sort of roles?
Yeah, I'd like to think so. I really would. I know just in terms of, Dr. Carroll, we haven't actually secured another doctor, since her commencing with us. And I'm not entirely surprised by that, because there aren't many Aboriginal doctors in this country.
So just in terms of appointing people to roles like that, and recruiting people to roles like that, whether it be doctor or nurse or OT, does that have the effect of drawing other people and creating a bit of momentum?
It can do, yes, definitely. I think that when we recruit, you know, any particular profession or any worker here at our organisation, what that then does is it does send a message to the community, and you know, obviously they will also talk to family and friends about, oh yes, I'm working at Barwon Health. Next question people will ask is, what's that like? You know, I mean, I get asked, you know, how are you going at Barwon Health, and I say, you know, it's a fantastic place to work. So that does speak volumes as well. So I do believe that it does have an impact. Obviously it's not the only thing, but certainly it does help, you know, when you hear, oh yeah, such and such has gone to work at Barwon Health and they really like it there.
So we were talking before about the medical officer that's been appointed. I understand that there are more plans in the doctor workforce space.
There are. There's always more plans in that area, because Deakin have a medical school, which I'm sure you're probably aware of.
Yes.
And I am aware that there's somewhere between 6 and 8 Aboriginal medical students that are at different stages of their degree. Now, obviously, what we'd ideally like to do is, you know, approach Deakin and look at the possibility of employing some of those. I mean, not all, we can't expect that all will want to stay in Geelong once they've finished their degrees, but certainly we know that there will be some of those, you know, some of that cohort that would like to stay here, and of course we'd love to have them.
So currently Barwon Health, along with VHA, are participating in a diversity working group, and the job of that working group is to make recommendations to the Minister of Health in terms of strategies to increase employment of Aboriginal people in public health services. But Sherelle, thank you so much for telling us about the Aboriginal Health Unit here at Barwon Health and about Barwon Health's experiences and its strategies to increase employment. Thank you for your time.
Oh, thank you, it's been a pleasure.